At Cox Business, we see the sacrifices you make for your business. We may not see every Saturday that feels like a Monday, or every missed goodnight kiss, but we see the sacrifices. That's why our gig speed internet and scalable voice solutions are backed by 24/7 support from our hometown experts. We care about your business as much as you do, because your business isn't small to us. Switch to Cox Business today.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media that is dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host, and during this live broadcast, we invite you to interact with us on our chat here on the emotionalpro.com radio page or on blogtalkradio.com/FPL. You can also call us on our toll-free number, which is 800-630-7858. That's 800-630-7858. You know, for many years, I've been fascinated with the fact that movies have been feeding very deep concepts to a vast audience, and I've had the idea that they were sort of softening people's subconscious minds to be available to hear ideas that might otherwise be difficult for them to hear. For example, in the Back to the Future movies, the concept that what we do in our present moment sets the conditions for what we will experience in our future was a primary idea that was presented. And the movie Avatar considered the abiding effects of lives lived on the basis of love instead of anger or hate. And those kinds of things are being introduced in movies all the time. Now, one of the interesting concepts we've yet to examine thoroughly is how the world of computers elucidates our own being and consciousness. That's where our guest today, Frank Huguenard, uses his movie to introduce the idea that our very cells are the same as a semiconductor. He suggests that computers are artificial organisms that we have created that replicate ourselves. Furthermore, he suggests that if you'll accept that our own organism is a biocomputer, then it's a short step to realize that consciousness is running the show, that our blueprint is stored in consciousness just like a master program stores things on your computer. If this is so, then it's more important than ever that we understand consciousness, and this is the stuff of today's show here on Full Power Living. Our guest, Frank Huguenard, can be found at beyondmefilm.com. He holds a degree in computer science from Purdue University and has spent 30 years in high tech in Silicon Valley. He's also an avid authority on Ultimate Frisbee and invented his own alternative Frisbee-based sport called Disc Hoops, and you can find a video on the internet that shows you how Disc Hoops is played. For the past several years, he's been executive director of a nonprofit organization he founded called Bountiful Garden Foundation. He's the proud father of two beautiful children, and I want you to join Frank and me now as we discuss consciousness, computers, and some interesting information about the life of Jesus the Christ. Frank Huguenard, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you so much for having me on, and good morning, everybody.
I want you to start us off by telling us how in the world you made the leap from high tech to consciousness and investigating the life of Jesus. What brought you here?
So about 11 years ago, I was unceremoniously escorted out the door of the company I was at by an armed guard. I was fired fairly vehemently, and I had gone off and invented a product on my own. The company was going through a lot of turmoil, and the product that I invented was actually not only every bit as much as what Skype is, but it had features in it that Skype still doesn't have.
Wow.
Ironically, I'm talking to you through Skype right now. And 4 years later, Skype was bought for $3 billion, and I was unemployed and broke. And this was all going on simultaneously with the dot-com collapse, as well as you know, while I was helping my girlfriend lose her battle with breast cancer. So she died and I got fired all within a few short months of each other. And it just put me into a way of being where I really started to look inwards to try to make sense of my life and try to figure out why it wasn't working out. And so I started actually in 2003, I began taking courses with the Art of Living Foundation, and they're very powerful courses, and anybody can look them up at artofliving.org, and the rest is history, as they say.
So I was so impressed as I was going over your concepts again, the fact that you don't live lightly on this earth. You are intense and deep, as I like to be also, but I can see you started out intense and deep with that story too. So not only have you been trying to make sense of what's gone on in your own life, it drew your attention to what goes on in our lives. And I want to look at some of the concepts you have on your movie, Beyond Me. You're working to make sense of the human journey, and you talk about the fact that 99.9% of our universe, both externally and internally, is empty space. Why is that important for us to understand?
Yeah, actually, it's all empty space. It's actually 99.99999% empty space.
Wow.
And then when you look at actually the subatomic particles that make up the protons and electrons and neutrons, you also realize that those are all transient, that that the particles that make up the electrons actually vanish. You know, I don't know, that the numbers are gigantic. It's a one with 22 zeros in front of it. That's how frequently the subatomic particles vanish every second. So actually everything around us is empty space. There's really nothing here. We literally live in a holographic universe, and this is all just a classroom for us to learn how to, divest ourselves. So the impressions that have been made on our consciousness over thousands and hundreds of thousands of years.
You also make note that not only does that kind of nothingness characterize our universe, but it characterizes the cells of our body. And it leads us to the notion, I guess, that there are only two states, as it were, the form and the formless. And yet we personally seem to live in a world that we believe is full of form.
Correct. This is all just an illusion. It's a distraction. Basically, the entire universe suffers from a personality disorder, which is kind of a phenomenal way of looking at things. But creation itself the creation of the universe was basically a gigantic defensive mechanism by the universal ego. And it has created this illusion that keeps us distracted from knowing our true selves. And our true selves, of course, are made up of pure love and pure bliss. And everything around us that keeps us distracted from that is basically a lie.
Mm-hmm. But it's one that many facets of the lie have been passed down for generations and generations and generations, and so we take it as truth. Do I understand that correctly?
Well, it's passed along through generations, but it's also passed down through our five senses. Our five senses feed us sensory input on, our sights and our sounds, et cetera, and those give the perception of something that's real. But the truth can never be threatened, and anything that can be threatened is not real. And so everything around us is really non-existent. Basically, the definition of truth that I like is the truth is that which does not change. Anything that changes is not real. And so basically, not only is the entire what we see as the perceptible universe not real, but universal consciousness itself is not real, which is kind of mind-blowing.
Wait a minute. Explain that one. You lost me right there when you just said universal consciousness itself is not real. How'd you get there?
Again, the definition of truth is that which does not change is the truth. Anything that changes is not real. And so certainly you can apply that to the material world. Anything in the material world has a lifetime that comes and it goes. But the universe is made up of the material world and universal consciousness. It also has an intellect an ego, and a memory. And those are also changing, which means they're not real.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, one of the things that you talk about in both of your films is the ego and how the ego works to keep us locked in. Do you want to comment on that?
Sure. And by the way, for those of you interested in watching both of my films, that you can find them on my website, beyondmefilm.com. The first film's Beyond Me. The second one's called Beyond Belief. I'm sure if you just go to YouTube and search for Beyond Me, Frank, you'll find them both. But yeah, the ego is the great deceiver. It's part of the defense mechanism that is set up to protect us, or that's the lie that it's telling us throughout our whole lives of trying not to have us merge back with our source, because there's this fear of guilt for having separated from the source in the first place. And so our entire lives are spent listening to this deceiver, the ego, who is constantly trying to be our friend and protect us from the wrath of God, as you will, or if you will, which is, of course, a complete lie. God doesn't have any wrath.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was thinking of my friend Richard Blackstone, who's been on the show, and he wrote a book called Nuts and Bolts Spirituality. And it addresses the issue of whether we are separate from God or consciousness, or we're one with God. So I was really impressed to hear you assert you are the field, and my impression was you are of the understanding that we are one with God and not separate from God. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're one with God, and we are actually, we've never left God. This is all just a dream that we're living, and you're not there, and I'm not here, and none of this is really happening.
Yes. And so you asked the question in Beyond Me about how it could possibly happen that we suffer and are unhappy or crazy, because the consciousness that's behind the beauty and harmony in our world is the same consciousness that's behind us. So how do we get into suffering and unhappiness and craziness?
We are constantly, it revolves around the scarcity principle. We are one with God, and so obviously we are everything, and we're lacking nothing. And yet the ego is constantly telling us we need more, we need more, we need more. So we constantly search through our lives trying to feed that dragon, that insatiable sense of lack that we have. That prevents us from knowing our true selves. And so, you know, we spend our entire lives trying to fill that lack with the physical world, which is, of course, impossible. And so through any number of different vices, from baseball games to drugs and sex and relationships to thinking is actually the biggest addiction that we have. Any number of other things that we do in our lives that we attempt to fill that insatiable sense of lack with. And so the solution really is to figure out that is just an illusion, and that we are one with God.
What I'm questioning in my mind as I listen to you and as I watch the films is, you say you studied at the Art of Living Foundation. You give your understanding or your interpretation of various things, and I keep asking in my mind, what are your beliefs based on? Is it Art of Living? Is it something else? Where do you glean your notion of what is?
Well, I've been a student for a long, long time. Yeah, I've been meditating for 8 years. Certainly a lot of my background went directly into the production of the film. I had a phenomenal experience in meditation a couple of years ago, where basically I was watching pre-thoughts form, and I had already understood through some discourses with the Art of Living that our heart chakra vibrates in one of three different frequency domains, hate, fear, or love. And I was, as I was meditating and watching these pre-thoughts form, I was also transitioning between fear and hate and love, because I was going through a lot of stuff in my life. And I was watching as these pre-thoughts formed, and I was perceiving them as fractals. It was really quite phenomenal. And when I was in fear, the the fractals were kind of muddy in color and kind of stunted in their growth. And then when I vibrated in love, these same fractals all of a sudden became extraordinarily vibrant and alive and colorful. And I recognized through my computer science background that what I was watching, it was basically the same as microcode or the basics of computer software. And this is all compiled with years and years and years of studying both Western and Eastern mysticism, Western psychology. I minored in psychology at Purdue when I was an undergraduate there, and I've spent a lot of my life studying all kinds of different teachings. So mm-hmm. it's really been a lifetime of studying, and Art of Living has definitely brought it all together. It's very comprehensive.
Thank you so much for explaining that, because I just kept going, well, where clearly you connect with what you're talking about, in my opinion, and really speak from your own knowing. And so thanks for the explanation. When you're talking about consciousness, you start then talking about instincts and reincarnation. Tell us about instincts. Why are they important to understand when we're looking at consciousness?
There's a few things that I've learned through Art of Living. And Art of Living was founded 30 years ago by Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, a spiritual guru in India. I'm going to go spend 10 days in a meditation retreat with him in Canada in a couple of weeks. I'm excited about that. Now, one of the things that we've learned from him is that there's a few different formulas for consciousness that are very relevant in understanding, basically life and how we flow through this stream of consciousness. One of them is that when you meditate, it has a direct impact on your kids. And this is an indirect effect. An indirect effect would be, I'm meditating, and so I'm more calm and I'm more relaxed. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this is a direct effect, that when I meditate, my son's consciousness is directly affected. He actually becomes more calm and relaxed and settled down. And this is something I've experienced in my own life. One of the other factors is that there's three of these that fit all together to comprise the answer to your question about instincts. Another one is that if I were to become enlightened this afternoon, 7 generations of my ancestors would also become instantaneously enlightened. And this indicates that there's a sort of like a link that my consciousness and all of my ancestors' consciousnesses are somehow bound together, that there's some linkage between the two. And then the third one, and this is really relevant in consciousness, instincts, as well as evolution, is that at the moment of conception, 50% of the impressions on your consciousness come from your parents, 25% from your mom, and 25% from your dad, and 50% come from your previous birth. And so there's a great case made in the film Beyond Me about how all of the traits and tendencies that make up animal instinctive behavior come through these mechanisms.
Mm-hmm. I was once told that 70% of the vibration present at the moment of my conception was of rejection. It took me a long time over the years to deal with that one. Thank you for that explanation. Now, when we come back, I would like to go into the whole issue of reincarnation that you present really interestingly, including with the information about this young man named James. And that being part of consciousness also. But we're up to our first break. We're talking with Frank Huguenard, who's a computer scientist, a consciousness researcher, and filmmaker, about his films Beyond Belief and Beyond Me. And we'll be right back after this break here on Full Power Living.
Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes? Or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com. I have just a few announcements. Please talk with us right now on either of our chats, emotionalpro.com or blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. And remember, if you miss us live, you can download archived podcasts from our radio show page, all of those places, or you can subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. And be sure to contact us anytime you'd like on emotionalpro.com and tell us where you are when you're listening. And we also want to thank you for telling your friends and family all that they can discover through Full Power Living. I recently learned that our friend Rob, who's an expat in China, is sharing the show with his friends in China. So thank you so much for doing that, Rob. And next week, we're going to be discussing a way to apply our knowledge about consciousness when our guest is Annie Burnside, who has a book entitled Soul to Soul Parenting, A Guide to Raising a Spiritually Conscious Family. Annie Burnside's information can help you with your own healing and integration, because if you don't have a family right now, certainly most of us grew up in one, and it can help you to understand what you've missed and what you can fill in for yourself. So be sure to join us for next week's show and to listen to all our episodes of Full Power Living. So, Frank, before we get back into our questions, I want to know a little bit more about your foundation and also a little bit about your less serious side, your ultimate frisbee self and your disc hoop self. Can you tell us a little bit about these other parts of you, please?
Sure, although to say that the frisbee side is less serious is really not knowing me very well.
I apologize for that. I made an assumption. I apologize.
Yes. Yeah, anybody who knows me in the frisbee world knows how intense I am. Ultimate Frisbee was created 43 years ago, and it's basically a horrible mistake. It has a whole bunch of idiosyncrasies built into it that are legacies of the era. There's no penalties, and it's really kind of a mess. And in spite of that, I spent 30 years of my life becoming the best player I could be. Which became extraordinarily frustrating because the sport itself was designed to be non-competitive, but there's certainly a lot of people like me who try to make it very competitive. And so the sport itself is a bit schizophrenic. And so after decades of beating my head up against the wall, I went off and invented my own sport, which I happen to consider the greatest sport ever invented, called disc hoops. www.dischoops.com, and it's a lot of fun in getting creating a new team sport and having athletes go out and play it is really a unique experience. I think the last real team sport that was invented was basketball, and that was 116 years ago. So it's really a unique thing to go out and see people do things with the framework for the set of rules that I've put together that just are mind-blowing for me. So that's a major portion of my life, and I continue to try to get the game off the ground. It's a lot of work. And the other thing that I do is I have a nonprofit organization that is focused on raising humanitarian relief funds for the last few years of selling nursery plants. Last year, we sent $15,000 to Haiti for earthquake relief, selling heirloom tomato plants. So that's what I've been doing in my spare time.
Mm-hmm. That's really wonderful. I have a daughter who's working in Ecuador at this point with very similar things. And we also featured Peter Hesse, who has been a long time setting up Montessori schools in Haiti. Mm-hmm. So I know there's a huge need there in addition to the earthquake results. So
there's a tremendous amount of great stuff going on in Haiti right now. And it's almost as if, you know, the earthquake was a blessing in disguise, because it's really been able to set up these other NGOs to go in there and do some really creative and meaningful work. It's really phenomenal.
Wonderful. I just hadn't thought about sending tomato plants. Of course, that would be wonderful. They get some food. That's really great. I often wish that in our own country, where we talk about shortages of food, we would basically teach people how to grow them in their, you know, in their side yards or something.
I have a tremendous vision for how to really revolutionize permaculture in urban areas. That is very comprehensive. It works with all the school systems, and I'm working on trying to get funding and stuff with that. But it's really an awesome plan on how to do exactly what you're saying, but doing it in a way that really involves everybody from 5-year-olds to 85-year-olds.
So I'm beginning to understand that you're getting fired was one of the best things that could be done for us. Because you've been doing a lot of things. So let's look at reincarnation. Because so many people, especially in the Christian world, do not accept reincarnation. And yet you're saying that we have to include it in order to understand our experience and the workings of consciousness. So you have this incredible report about a young man, a little boy named James, who was a pilot during World War II, I think, who went down and was able to actually take you to the spot where his plane went down and go and meet many, many years later some of the people that he served with and recognize them and call them by name. Tell us a little bit about that.
All right, correct. The story of James Leininger is probably one of the most well-documented cases of reincarnation, at least in contemporary times. And certainly reincarnation is never going to be something that can be proven in a laboratory. It can't be peer-reviewed. All we have is anecdotal evidence and, you know, case studies that we can look at. And this one is certainly very compelling. If you watch the film, and again, it's Beyond Me at beyondmefilm.com, you'll see the report Eileen's talking about. And it's really quite amazing how this boy at the age of, I think, 2 or 3 years old started having these nightmares, and his parents, who were devout Christians and, you know, certainly didn't believe in reincarnation, were trying to help him because he was going through all these traumatic nightmares and stuff. And, you know, basically the father doing his research, trying to debunk, you know, this stories that his son was coming up with, actually proved them. You know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, anybody with an open mind who looks at the evidence presented in this case is fairly convinced. And the point you bring up about Christianity is actually why I went ahead and made a second film. I didn't realize I was going to make a second film, but reincarnation is such a hot topic with Christians that I, you know, given everything that I've learned, you know, my conclusion is that Jesus would have had to have taught reincarnation. You know, every other master has. It's just basically impossible for him not to have. And so I went off and did a bunch of research looking for, you know, these lost teachings. Certainly they're not in the Bible. Where are they? And that's the basis for the entire second film, Beyond Belief.
Yes. Why is reincarnation important in terms of understanding consciousness?
Well, it's important in understanding our happiness and what drives us to be unhappy. And that, you know, basically all the things that we have in our in our lives, the traits and tendencies that make us miserable are all instinctive behaviors that we've, you know, learned over hundreds and thousands of lifetimes. And these impressions on our consciousness, I like to compare them to if you took a piece of paper and crumbled it up into a little ball and then opened up a piece of paper again, it would be left with all these creases and folds and bends in it. And those are all the things in our lives that, you know, cause things like codependency and all these other issues that really make us miserable. And in fact, a strong argument could be made for the fact that right now we are in hell. And we're in hell lifetime after lifetime after lifetime until all those impressions on that piece of paper, all those folds and bends get removed.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you understand how this works and the mechanisms there, then you realize that it's your responsibility to do something about these, that nobody's going to do them. A priest isn't going to do it, or some ritual is not going to do it, or certainly drugs and alcohol are not going to do it. And that it's something that we need to address within ourselves and something that is important and relevant.
Thank you. You feature in Beyond Me, you feature Bruce Lipton, who's the author of The Biology of Belief, and he's been on our program a couple of times also. And he's talking about his discovery that the definition of a cell membrane is the same as that of a semiconductor computer chip, and that DNA behaves like a computer program, with us being the typist for the data.
The whole point I'm trying to make in this film is that we are biocomputers. And, you know, I'm sitting here in front of my desktop computer and I've got Norton antivirus. I have to defragment the hard disk a couple times a year. I've got malware protection, spyware doctor, all kinds of spam bot, you know, protection. I've got a firewall in my router. So we do all these things on our computer, and this computer is worth about $500. You know, maybe the photos on it are worth a few more dollars. And yet we go through all this expense to keep our computers operating well. And for most of us, we've all experienced what it's like to have a fairly nasty virus on our computers. The performance goes almost to nothing. It becomes very slow and sluggish. And this is exactly how our consciousness behaves. And so Bruce Lipton's work has been very instrumental in helping me make that case that we are definitely biocomputers. Mm-hmm. And we need to do every bit as much of system maintenance, daily maintenance, weekly, monthly maintenance on our own consciousness as we do on our own computers.
Mm-hmm.
This is very important.
And I have heard explanations that computers, the world of computers and the incredible technology that we're developing, is also preparing us to be able to do the same kind of communicating without computers that is coming in future time. So that's interesting to me to look at it in both directions. My interest is in emotions. And in your film, Beyond Me, you have clinical psychologist Dr. Lynn Sereda, who asserts that emotions can act like a computer virus that clogs our ability to function. And I wanted to know if you would give us a fuller explanation of that.
Well, I would qualify that a little bit. I would say that when emotions get trapped,
mm-hmm.
that's when they become the viruses. Most of us do not allow emotion. There's nothing wrong with emotions. But mostly people become overwhelmed by emotions and they don't let them flow freely through us. And so when they become trapped, that's when they cause problems within our own consciousness and affect the way we behave.
I totally agree with that. In fact, I preach that there is no such thing as a negative emotion. It's those trapped emotions that turn negative.
I had this argument with someone last week. I mean, certainly things like lust and rage and anger are not positive emotions.
Well, yes, true. So we won't duplicate the argument right now, but that would be fun to do sometime. So a lot of this Now, you have an interesting amount of work talking about mental illness in the film also, and what sets us up for mental illness. And certainly our we are besieged with so many so-called illnesses now. It's almost like people are looking for, can I create a new name for a new illness and then I can take a pill, sort of thing. You know, what's your understanding of how the ego and mental illness work together?
Well, I think that we're all insane. You know, I mean, I have a scale of 1 to 10 of the insanity scale. And being a 1 is, you know, the most psychotic, schizophrenic lunatic you can imagine. And a 10 being an enlightened master. But that's how I look at mental health. In other words, the more mentally healthy you get, the more evolved. And so there are very few mentally healthy people on the planet at any given time. Most everybody's insane. And according to experts in the field of codependency, over 80% of the population suffers from codependency. And I don't even like the word codependency because it is really lacking. If someone's codependent and then they get out of a relationship and then they're single for 10 years, that doesn't mean they stop being codependent. They still have that codependency. So a better way of saying it is outdependent, or suffering from outdependency, which is, in other words, becoming addicted to things on the outside, looking towards the world without rather than the world within. And that applies to just about everybody. Unfortunately, when people have this condition, and they're more addictive than other people, mm-hmm. and then they get into relationships, the relationship itself or their partner becomes an addiction in and of itself, and that's a problem. But really, all of the problems that we have in this lifetime are all addictions to the outside world.
Right.
Which is codependency.
My own contention about people who I call such behavior energy sapping is that we are born codependent or manipulative, that we have to have an agent working on our behalf in order to function when our brain and body are immature, and that as we get mature, we are designed to drop this so-called codependency. And so we've actually come to the point in our lives where we accept codependency or manipulation as normal when it's not. It's just common.
I don't agree with that at all.
That's interesting. I got to talk with you some more. That could help me. All right. But ultimately, meditation can clear a lot of this up. And how does that work?
That all these things are stored in our physical body, these impressions made in our consciousness. And Buddha, one of Buddha's claims to fame, there were a lot of the masters before Buddha that taught meditation and a lot of masters afterwards. But basically, Buddha's, you know, claim to fame was that it's vibrations within our system that causes the addictions, that the sensations associated with an addiction is really what the addiction is. And by sitting still and focusing on the sensations and not moving, we can release ourselves of those addictions. And so basically, through the art of meditation, we're able to to still our minds and calm our minds to the point where we can allow these deep-rooted blocked emotions to be released. It's very simple. It's extraordinarily powerful. I started meditating. I mean, I've been meditating on and off probably my whole life, but I started doing it daily when I got involved with the Art of Living 8 years ago. And after about 4 years, which is really a relatively short period of time,
yes.
In the world of meditation, after just 4 years, I was able to get into a state of pure, all I can say is divine love or bliss every day for about an hour.
Wow.
It's So I got that going for me, which is nice. It's really quite incredible. And actually what happened after that, you know, after a couple of years of that, and I kind of got used to it, it's like, oh, this isn't just some fluke. You know, this is, you know, what happens is you want to really share that with the world and say, wow, you know, if you knew what you were missing. Certainly meditation has all kinds of different health benefits. It lowers your cholesterol, you sleep better, you look younger, every cell in your body is rejuvenated, it lowers the cortisol, the stress hormone, all kinds of really great health benefits come out of meditation. And certainly it helps with your psychological state of mind. But if people knew what they were missing with this state of divine bliss, everybody would do it immediately. So a couple of years ago, I started writing a book, and I finished a manuscript. I called it Beyond Me, and I never really published it or took it to an editor or anything like that. And then a friend of mine was asking me why I wanted to publish a book, and the answer came to me simultaneously. I want to help people. Oh, I'll just do a documentary. So without any training or experience or help, I did all the filming and post-production myself, and without any budget, I went out and produced not one, but two documentary films.
Wow. Yes, and it's very interesting, and we're up to our second break, and I want to talk more with you about Beyond Belief when we get back. So we're talking today with Frank Huguenard, who's a computer scientist, a consciousness researcher, and a filmmaker. About his films, Beyond Belief and Beyond Me, and I believe he has a third one that he is in process of doing also. So we'll be talking about these movies and some of the ideas about Jesus that Frank puts in his movies when we come back right here on Full Power Living.
Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Everybody feels anger, but if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com. We're back here on Full Power Living with our guest, Frank Huguenard, who's talking with us about his wonderful films, Beyond Me and Beyond Belief, which you can find out more about at beyondmefilm.com. And Frank, you are the only person besides my own son that I know of who challenged what the Catholic Church was teaching about Jesus at the age of six. My son's contention was that the only way we knew anything about Jesus was through stories, and that anyone could put anything they wanted to into stories, and he wasn't going to believe in Jesus until he could see him for himself. And I appreciate that you had a similar difficulty at the same age. What was your difficulty at six with what you were being presented about Jesus?
Well, just the whole notion that people who were not Catholic would burn in hell, and that, you know, some aborigine or somebody in some, you know, desolate part of the planet where they had no access to this knowledge. I mean, I wasn't questioning even the the veracity of the Catholicism at that point. I mean, obviously they go hand in hand, but it was just such an obvious flaw in the logic. It's like, wait a second, this person, well, you know, is completely innocent. Why would they burn in hell? And of course, you go from there to say, okay, you know, if that's not valid, then the whole thing's not valid.
Uh huh. And I just wanted to mention to you that some time ago I interviewed Swami Kriyananda, who is a devotee of Paramahansa Yogananda. And Yogananda, I don't know if you're aware of it, but Yogananda told people that his lineage was descended from Jesus.
Correct. And Kriyananda was in a documentary film called Jesus in India that came out a few years ago. So I'm familiar with him as
You're
well.
You're quite familiar with that. Okay. We also had on this program Greg Braden. And when we go to Beyond Belief, it seems that both of you are very interested in the ancient texts, like the Nag Hammadi texts and documents and Gospels, to tell us what actually happened with Jesus. There's quite a bit missing, like the 18 years before he began his ministry and perhaps what happened afterwards, after the so-called crucifixion, or the crucifixion as it's reported. Maybe I'll put it that way. Tell us a little bit about what you've learned about Jesus and why it's of importance to you.
Right. Well, again, I've been studying Eastern tradition for 8 years fairly intensely, as I tend to do things. I look at Jesus through that lens. And my basic premise here is that if you, the pedigree of the information we get about Jesus is suspect. It doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure that out, that, you know, 99% of the documentation was destroyed. All the original texts were in Aramaic, and yet we don't have a single text, a single gospel, a single parchment or fragment that has any Aramaic. So everything has been transcribed and translated into different languages. We know that dozens and maybe even hundreds and hundreds of books, different gospels, were destroyed. We know some of the epistles in the Bible attributed to Paul are actual forgeries. And so really what is in the Bible is an amalgamation of some truth and some fiction. And if you really want to understand Jesus, then go to the same schools that he went to. I mean, that's the whole point of my film, Beyond Belief.
Uh-huh.
And so in doing my research, I just went ahead and outlined a lot of the evidence that I just mentioned about a lot of the things that were destroyed. But fortunately for us, in 1945, in Nag Hammadi, Egypt, a large clay jar was found with 53 books in it that date back 2,000 years that were able to shed light on a lot of these documents that were destroyed and present an entirely different version of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
That coincidentally, you know, completely parallels or corroborates Eastern knowledge, which is very fascinating.
But as you so well depict, I can't remember the name of the woman scholar who was on the program with the Elaine Pagel Stress. She was really she is fantastic in terms of explaining a lot. There's a lot of resistance in Christianity now because the Bible is believed to be the word of God. And what you're bringing up is, well, it may have some words from God, but it's really an amalgamation, like you're saying, of some truth and some not truth, and that there may be a lot more to the story, and it may be time for us to learn more of the story. Am I depicting that correctly?
Absolutely. And it's really sad that, you know, there's so much. I mean, I look at the Bible and I really kind of threw out the baby with the bathwater when I was maybe 20, really never paid much attention to Christianity for a long time. But now that I've meditated for the last 8 years and done other things spiritually in my life, I can go back and read some passages in the Bible, and some of it, you know, really stands out. Oh, this to me is authentic. This passes the Frank test, you know, given everything I know and have learned and have experienced. I see this passage here as credible, and this, you know. So I recognize that there's a lot of truth in the Bible, but unfortunately, there's a lot of distortion and corruption, and human hands have been laid on it. And a lot of the human handedness that's gone into it has been the circular logic and the things that have really made a lot of people who read it very close-minded. And it's rather unfortunate because, they're not really understanding, what Jesus is really all about.
On the other hand, it just struck me that when people present such a closed-minded or I believe in this as the absolute truth, it stimulates a lot of other people, like yourself, to investigate, that it actually serves a purpose to draw our attention and get us to really look at what we have to learn, what we have to consider, which we might not otherwise do.
That's true. Unfortunately, though, hundreds of millions of people, lost their lives over the last 2,000 years because of a few lies that have been put in the Bible, and it's framed and formed Western civilization. I mean, our country is founded on this form of Christianity.
Now, before I lose the opportunity to do so, you are in process of funding and making a third documentary. Is that correct? Tell us what it is and what it's about.
The third film and the funding, I had been approved with Kickstarter, but that had run its course and I didn't get funded through that. So the entire project is a little bit on hold. I'll get around to it someday. But beyond the third film is going to be Beyond Reason. Mm-hmm. Which really covers a lot of what we've already talked about, which is that the entire universe as we know it is just an illusion, and that our intellects will spend our entire lives trying to slice and dice and dissect and break things down into the smallest elements, trying to find the truth. And you can never find the truth with your intellect, but you need your intellect to come to that conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I've got an idea of how I want to do this film. It'll be significantly different from the first two in that it'll be something that hopefully I travel around the world interviewing various swamis and rishis and yogis to have them speak about the same things that I want to put on the film.
Well, that sounds very interesting. So one of the really fascinating things you talk about in Beyond Belief is the fact that is your assertion or your understanding that Jesus, once released from the tomb, traveled back to India and lived to the ripe old age of 115, and that there's a lot of support, a lot of documentation about that.
Yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing. I don't know if I slept for a couple of days after I figured all this out. It had such a huge impact on my own personal life, the whole, all the guilt and all the things that we are raised with in Catholicism. There's a significant amount of evidence. There's a tomb, there's a grave, presumably there's DNA in the grave. At the Rosebowl Shrine in Srinagar, Kashmir. Allegedly, Jesus had even handled the staff of Moses, so purportedly even Moses died in Kashmir too, which is pretty interesting. It's kind of fascinating right now. Yesterday was the first day of Rosh Hashanah, and coincidentally, it's also the first day of a holiday in India called Navratri. They're both the same duration the holidays are. They are exactly the same days of the year every year. There's a lot of parallels between Judaism and I don't even want to call it Hinduism because Hinduism really kind of misses the point. The ancient traditions in India kind of go well beyond Hinduism. But certainly there's a lot of parallels. So there's a lot of documentation that supports Jesus going to India after the crucifixion. We know that he was alive according to the Bible. We don't know actually. The whole story about the crucifixion is very bizarre. Usually when you die on the cross, when you're crucified, it takes several days, up to a week to die. And if you don't die quick enough, what happens when you die on the cross, you die of suffocation, which is something I learned during this film. And basically you get to the point where your arms can't support you. And so you're just kind of hanging by your arms and you can't breathe. And when you don't die quickly enough, they break your legs. So you can't support yourself with your legs. And we know from the Bible that they didn't break his legs. He was only on the cross for 6 hours, which is really relatively short amount of time for someone to die from crucifixion. When they took him into the tomb, they brought in 100 pounds of healing herbs. So instead of bringing in embalming fluids, they brought in aloe and other healing materials. So that's kind of odd. They put a sponge with gall and vinegar up to his lips right before he died. And typically, the effect of gall and vinegar would have the same effect as smelling salts. It would basically wake somebody up. And yet, instead, what happened was that he passed out and died. So there's speculation that maybe what was in the sponge was some sort of, you know, herbal concoction that simulated death or something. I mean, it's really impossible to know. And there's a lot of different documentation from the time, the Gospel of Peter, for instance, which is not in the Bible, which has a dramatically different narrative of what happened. There's all kinds of theories that there was a conspiracy with Pontius Pilate that they said, okay, well, let's make it look like he died and then, you know, blah, blah, blah. So did he die? Was he dead for 5 minutes? Was he dead? I mean, all we know is 36 hours later, he wasn't in the tomb.
Wow.
Yeah, so it wasn't 3 days. It was 36 hours. Did he have a near-death experience? Did he go into some sort of yogic trance? I've had my own experience where in meditation, my heart stops beating and I stop breathing for 10 minutes. And this was by accident. I know, it's phenomenal. This was by accident. I'm not trained to do that. Say, and definitely a yogi can do this. So how dead was he? Was he ever really dead? You know, I don't know. It's hard to tell. But we know that he was alive. In none of the four Gospels did he actually ascend into heaven. That was only added hundreds of years later. So it's fairly plausible that, yeah, you know, after they tried to assassinate him, he went back to the one place in the world where he felt safe. I don't see why that's very hard to believe. I will say that the number one response I've gotten from beyond belief from around the world was how comforting the film was to people, that it really
That's
grounded
really
them and that it really helped put Jesus in a whole new context for them.
That is a wonderful place to stop for today. Frank, I really appreciate you. Your movies are beautiful. They certainly are comforting. They're thought-provoking, and they address vital questions that, especially in these times of transformation, we all need to be interested in. So thank you so much for doing that, and thank you for coming on Full Power Living today to talk about your ideas and about your work.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Next week, October 6th, we're going to talk with Annie Burnside about soul-to-soul parenting. So join us for another deep, intense discussion, which I, of course, love. Each week, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, for Full Power Living right here on EmotionalPro.com and BlogTalkRadio.com. Thank you, producer Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.